are you doing today? Raise your hand. If you responded with or got the answer, busy, always busy, raise your hand. Nobody. Oh, I'm so proud of you guys. I have to admit that that's probably one of my automatic responses. When somebody asks, how are you today? I go, you know, like busy, but I'm good. Like I'm good. Has anyone ever done that before? Raise your hand. Okay, so there's a few. I'm not the only one. I'm glad. We're just going to pray before I get started, and then we're going to dive into Scripture today. Dear Heavenly Father, we just thank you so much for this day and your presence that already fills this place, Lord. We pray that you would use this word for your glory, that you would speak to my heart and speak to everybody in this place's heart today, Lord. Just teach us what you need to teach us. Amen. So, we're going to talk about busyness today. Have you ever felt overwhelmed with busyness before? Yes. I get more hands on that one, right? Yeah. You ever felt overwhelmed with busyness before? John Keynes in 1915 said this, "For the first time since its creation, man will be faced with its real and permanent problem, and that is how to occupy the leisure." You see, it was then, in 1915, that we started creating machinery and systems that would replace human labor in general. It was then assumed that we would be overwhelmed with extra time, with free time. We know that that is not true. We have done the exact opposite, in fact. In fact, if we saw John Keynes today, we'd probably ask him, leisure? What is that? What are you talking about? We have done the very opposite of what he predicted in 1915. It seems that everything around us screams busyness, hurry, or hustle. It's a growing trend that does not seem to want to stop. We are statistically the most anxious and depressed generation right now due to our busyness. Let's look at the statistics, okay? The employment stats from the last few generations look something like this. If you are from the boomer generation, which is 1946 to 1964, can you raise your hand? Okay, good job. We're glad you're here. Okay, Generation X, which is 1965 to 1985, can you raise your hand? Ooh, you are well represented too. Good job. I'm so glad you guys are in church today. And then the millennials, which is 1985 to 1999, which is also Generation Y. Who's from that one? That's me. There's less of us here, which is a little sad. So this is what the statistics say, that in general, each of these generations at one time in their history peaked at a certain rate of employment, okay? So the boomer generation peaked at 54 million people employed at the same time from their generation. That's how many people, that's just what happened. In the Generation X, 66 million people were employed at the same time, and that was the peak of their generation. In the millennial generation, though, we are estimated to peak at 75 million people employed at one time. That's a pretty good statistic, isn't it? Jobs are being created, people are being employed, it's a good thing. But it also means that there's more of us busy, right? Because this is the truth. In 1976, only 36% of families with children were surveyed to have a dual income household. Okay? In 2014, that statistic has largely increased and is now at 69% of families have to have a dual income just to survive. See, it's all around us. It's not just us that scream busy, it's our economy that screams busy. We no longer have time just to slow down. One more stat before we move on. In 2018, it was documented that 32% of families are going into debt each year to fund their children's extracurricular activities. 36% of families. That was in 2018. That had increased by 3.5% from 2017, just to fund the activities that they were doing. 9 out of 10 families believe that their activities are vital to their children's growth. 70% of those parents believe that the busier you keep your children, the better off they will be. Have you ever thought that? My family, definitely. The busier we are, the better we will be. I read it said somewhere that busyness is a trap, However, it's one that most of us are unaware of. As it is said, a mousetrap doesn't look like a mousetrap to a mouse. It doesn't. That's why it works. Busyness is the same. It's a trap that we're unaware of, and so we all fall to it. Let's talk for a moment on the everyday habits that are attributing to my busyness. So if you're like me, you go to the grocery store or Walmart, maybe those one big fancy Walmarts that has self-checkout. And you count your items, and you're like, should I go to self-checkout to be faster? Should I just go through a normal lineup? And then you start scanning all the lineups to see which one's the shortest. Then you start counting items on the registry to see which one's the shortest. And then you start examining each person to see which one's the slowest. And then you make your decision. And then halfway through, you're like, crap. I picked the wrong one. Right? We are trying to keep something as simple as shopping short. We are pushed by busyness. It's the same. Just this week, I brought really good mac and cheese to church to eat my leftovers. And the microwave here is not very good. If anyone would like to fund a microwave, go right ahead. I put my macaroni and cheese in there for 2.5 minutes, okay? I stirred it. It was great. Well, I take it back to the Sunday school room, and I start to eat it, and I'm like, ugh, totally lukewarm. But I'd rather eat it than go back and put it in for another minute. It's true. Even with a microwave, we're trying to save minutes. It's also true that when you drive down the road, the speed limit sign, it used to be our maximum. Now it's most definitely our minimum. Definitely. We've added busyness to every aspect of our lives, and we don't even notice it. It's in everyday items. We see this busyness evolve alongside technology. Did you know that every 2 days we create as much data as there was between the beginning of time and 2003? In 2 days, we exceed that amount of data. Isn't that crazy? The rise we've seen in this generation is ridiculous. Jefferson Bethke puts it something like this: that which you spend your time with, you will slowly become. He goes on to say, did any of you realize that the majority of our population sleeps next to their phones? That's me. Definitely me. I sleep next to my phone. I like to say it's for, you know, an alarm clock, but it's not. I have an alarm clock on my bedside table. The age of technology is slowly rotting our brains. The average attention span to read a book used to be 3 hours. We have dwindled our way all the way down to about 10 minutes. It's no wonder we have decided that our bodies must stay busy. We don't have the willpower to stay in one place long enough. It's the truth, and we see it largely in the next generation that's coming, in our children. The level of access we have to one another is and will not be controlled. If I asked you to take out your phone right now and text me, I would get an instantaneous response. And if I thought of something at midnight that I forgot to do, I could send out an email, and they would get it the next morning. We have so much access to one another that we have attributed and added to the amount of busyness in our lives. Because I can text my brother and say, hey, can you go do this? Can you go do this? And he will drop everything and do it. I don't have to wait till he comes home anymore. We're going to use a few resources today, and one of them is going to be Jefferson Bethke's book, To Hell with the Hustle. Now, you might not like that title, but I assure you that my choice of literature is just fine, okay? These people were praying about what to call their book, and they went to their publisher with this name, and they went prepared to defend it, okay? They were like, we believe that busyness is one of the greatest sins of this generation because it's a sin that is unseen. And so we're going to put it right back where it belongs, to hell with the hustle. So we're going to watch a really quick video on some of his words. Can we pull that up, guys? This light.
A lot of us are hustling right to our own grave. Speed and hustle and hurry are the air we breathe. There's this tsunami at all of our backs pushing us called the hustle. And in truth, we like it. We glorify it. We worship it. We brag when we pull all-nighters for work and how we're overcommitted, overtired, overworked, hashtag the grind. But one quick question. How's that going for us? What if hustle isn't actually a gift, but actually a curse? The very source or center of gravity that our burnout, our exhaustion, and our loneliness are all orbiting around. Japanese theologian Kosuke Koyama notes that God himself actually has a precise speed, and it's not hustle. That what we find in Jesus is someone who walks 3 miles per hour. Yes, specifically 3 miles per hour. Why? Because that's the precise speed you are going when you are walking in a peaceful and loving way, a non-hurried way. Metaphorically, what if our souls actually, we could say we're going 3 miles per hour, because love slows down and walks at 3 miles per hour to see things, to see people, to be human, and to flourish. It's not a coincidence that Jesus was the most anchored, secure, and loving presence that's ever walked the earth, and it's clear that's not an ounce of hustle or hurry in him. But here's my plea for us, to at least start being honest, because a lot of us, when describing our relationship with God, we like to use the euphemism that we are walking with Jesus, but in truth, we're not. In reality, we're walking ahead of Jesus. We're frantically away from Jesus. We're busy and separated from Jesus, or lonely, depressed, and burned out, and he's back there behind us, walking at 3 miles per hour, waiting and walking at a speed of love and not hustle, inviting us not only in his presence and his principles, but also into his pace, giving us not just new rules to live by, but a new cadence to dance in. So last question, how do we get there? Well, first, we say to hell with the hustle.
I've read most of his book. I quite enjoyed it. It's a good read. If you want to hear the title and the author again, I'll tell you at the end of service. But the truth is that somewhere along the line, we started realizing that we had a problem. It's true. Parents started limiting screen time and taking more family trips together. They valued family night more. All things that we did generations ago, we're just bringing back because we've realized that we have a problem. Billy Graham shared this story in one of his messages. He said at the beginning of his ministry, when he was doing revival meetings, he was in LA, and they had just had their little girl, Ruth, just a few weeks before. And then he left to go to do these revival meetings, and his whole family showed up the day of the revival meeting, and his sister-in-law walked in with a baby. He's like, who's this? She's so cute. It was his baby girl, Ruth. It was his own child. He had been so busy doing the Lord's work that he was missing out on some of the pleasures of life. The truth is, the same thing happened to me this week. I was speaking about prayer at After School Club. Charlene and Jen were there. And at the beginning of the meeting, we had prayed. And then I went on to teach about prayer. And partway through, this little girl came up to me and said, Pastor Kanna, we're going to pray at the end, right? I said, yeah, of course, we're going to pray for everybody's requests. She said, well, I have a big one for today, and since we're learning about prayer, I want to share it with everybody. I said, well, absolutely. And I got down to her level, and I asked about it, and she told me all about her prayer request, and I said, okay, so it's your job, before the day's over, to remind me that we need to pray for your request. Well, the day went on, and we talked and talked and talked about prayer. In fact, it's going to have to be 2 lessons. We had so much conversation. But I left that place having not done what? I didn't pray. I was kicking myself. I felt so burdened by it. I was like, the very thing I was talking about distracted me from actually doing it. It's something we all do. And sometimes the end result is not that catastrophic, but sometimes it is. I didn't pray for her request. That's a big deal. But somewhere along the line, we started admiring those who are busy. The mom who can shuffle all the extracurriculars, feed their family 3 meals a day, keep the home clean, bring in a second income, and volunteer on all the committees has become a goal for moms across the board. You might be sitting there going, well, it's not achievable, but it's still a goal, right? It's still something that every mom wants to be able to do. Or maybe it's the student who can hold down a job, get straight A's, volunteer, and continue to build a very impressive resume to apply to their dream college. It's an unrealistic expectation on the human race. Or maybe it's the ministry leader who sits on the board, runs a few ministries, holds down a full-time job, and has a happy and healthy home life that is respected by our church. It's unattainable. And we work ourselves into the ground trying to achieve it. Hustle is the problem. It's not the solution. I believe, like I said, that hurry is one of the greatest sins that is in our churches today simply because we don't call it sin. There's a whole bunch of sin in our churches, but this one is threatening your very character. Somewhere along the line, we started filling our lives with so much stuff that we left God behind. If we can pull up slide one there, I can't see anything back here, so I might keep doing that. There we go. What if we started to exchange wisdom for shortcuts? I believe that's what we've done. Believing we have all the time in the world is costing our family, sanity, health, and joy. The truth is that we are now convinced that society needs to slow down, but are we actually being convicted by the Spirit to do it? We know what needs to happen. But maybe you haven't heard the voice of God tell you to slow down yet. We're going to look at Luke 10, 38 through 42, a small passage in the Bible that you all know very well, I'm sure. It's the story of Mary and Martha. Every time on the screen, a yellow scripture comes up. If the word Jesus comes up, can you read it with me? So just read Jesus with me, okay? Ready? While Jesus and his followers were traveling, Jesus went into a town. A woman named Martha let Jesus stay at her house. Martha had a sister named Mary. Mary was sitting at Jesus' feet and listening to him teach. Next. Martha became angry because she had so much work to do. She went in and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me alone to do all of the work? Tell her to help me." But the Lord answered her, "Martha, Martha, you're getting worried and upset about too many things. Only one thing is important. Mary has chosen the right thing, and it will never be taken away from her." We are going to go back and look at culture again. What the society says is acceptable is not necessarily biblically acceptable. We must first note that in biblical time, hospitality was a social requirement in their culture. It was considered shameful to turn anyone away from your door. Apparently, Martha's family did this really well, because Martha was doing it really well. You see, Martha was the oldest. She felt it her responsibility to meet the needs of her guests. We know that Jesus was not her typical guest, nor was he a stranger to the family. Martha likely knew what food he liked best, that she could prepare it for him. As a friend, she probably took on the responsibility of making sure he felt loved and cared for during his stay, and for she knew he had traveled often. She probably wished just to bless him with her service. She was the type of personality that liked to keep watch over the little details. It's how she showed love. It is hard as adults not to relate to her need to serve, because I do that. I have people coming over for lunch this afternoon, and I spent my whole morning before coming to church cleaning and getting ready for these guests that were family. We know how it goes. You clean the house, make a meal, make sure the kids are dressed on their best behavior, and make sure everyone knows the topics of conversation that are not allowed at the dinner table. That's just for a normal house guest. That's not even just for Jesus. That's for a normal house guest. It is possible for service to Christ to degenerate into mere busy work that is no longer full of devotion to God. Don't let your service become self-serving. If we are too easily distracted from spending time with Jesus, then we are simply too busy. That's all there is to it. "Martha, Martha, you are getting worried and upset about too many things," Jesus replied. The problem was neither Jesus or Mary, even though that's where Martha directed her anger. If I'm caught in the trap that is busyness, the problem is not my spouse, my children, my boss, my coworker, my coach, my teacher, or the need in general. The problem is me. Somewhere along the line, I started believing these lies. You see, Jesus rebuked Mary. He said to her, he addressed her worry problem. "You are getting worried and upset about too many things. Too often, I am busy because I'm worried that the job won't get done. I'm worried it won't get done correctly. Maybe I can do it better than everybody else." Not true. I'm worried that I am nothing if I am not my accomplishment. I'm worried that maybe I'm just not needed. These things keep us trapped in a cycle of mere busyness. It causes us to overcompensate with time and energy, these lies that we started to believe. There's one more lie about busyness that I have been prone to fall to. My mother used to say, it's only and hopefully just for a season. Anyone ever said that? Oh, it's just a season. It's okay, it'll get better. It's just this time in life. One time I answered her and I said, have you noticed that every season is followed up with another one? I can't seem to get out. True. It's true. What I was realizing, though, that it was not for a season, but it was a behavior that I had created and formed into a habit. I started to thrive off the busyness. People would say, Kiana, you're doing so much. How are you doing it? And I'd go, oh, you know, it was a compliment to me. I was able to accomplish so much. I had created a season of busyness instead of there simply being one. Now, I know that there's a season for sprinting. I know that the young person who wants to work for the entire year before they get married so that they go in without doubt, doubt. Doubt was not the answer. Debt was the answer. Go in without debt is a season of sprinting. I know that your first child, the first year of life, a season of sprinting. I get it. But somewhere along the line, we started to thrive on it. The truth is, maybe I'm just too busy for help. We like the scripture found in Matthew 11 that reads, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. You will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. I'm sure you know it. I'm sure you've asked for it. I'm positive. But on some level, we think maybe it's just unattainable. Or maybe it's not for this generation that so embraces experiences and accomplishments. Why? Because we are so busy that we stopped hearing the voice of God. I'm going to ask you, how does God speak, in a whisper or a shout? A whisper. Maybe I started to get so busy from outside sources that I was hearing other voices louder than I was hearing Jesus. Maybe I didn't stop to listen to him when he was trying to tell me, slow down. Much like a paramedic, if you've ever been in an accident before, anyone here ever been in an accident with a loved one and you were concerned for their health? Anyone? Yeah, a few of you. So if you've ever been in an accident with a loved one and they were injured worse than you, and the paramedics come and they want to stop you to check you out, and you're like, no, I gotta go with them. I gotta make sure they're okay. But the doctor insists that they must check you out anyways. The truth is, God is that paramedic insisting that you slow down. Know this, if you're not saying no to good stuff, then you're probably not saying it enough. A lot of things around you sound great. A lot of things around you sound good. But I can't do it all. That's the truth. I can't do it all. I'm not Superwoman. I'm not God. I can't do it all. And so sometimes my answer has to be no, even though it sounds great. Did you know that by every worldly standard, Jesus wasted his life? Think about it. He lived on this earth roughly 34 years. 30 of those years we don't even have documented for his 3 years of ministry. Three. By very worldly standard, that's not enough. It's not enough to make an impact. It's not enough to make change. By every worldly standard, Jesus wasted his life. It doesn't sound like the 21st century definition of success to me. In fact, even less so when we remember that he was killed after those 3 years just to silence him. However, we know without a shadow of a doubt that he fulfilled the Father's plan with attention to detail. There was no mishaps or mistakes. It wasn't accidentally cut short. It was just 3 years of greatness. My question to you is, are you willing to waste your life for Jesus? Because a lot of us say we're ready for greatness. We're ready to accept a life of greatness for Jesus. But that has propelled us into a nature of busyness. And sometimes he's just asking you if you're willing to waste your life for him. This is exactly what my family did. My family had a great life. We had a large house. We had a whole bunch of kids in our house because we were fostering. My dad had a great job as a manager at a plant. We had an awesome church family that was growing and thriving. However, this voice in my dad's head always said, "I need you to give it up. I need you to walk away." My mother hated that. She hated that. She would outright say, "I'm not doing that." Did you know my mother had an attitude like that sometimes? No, I'm only joking. But she did. She did not want to do what he was saying. So she brushed him off every time. Well, this one in particular day, we at the time, Noah and I were like 8 and 6, I don't know, somewhere in there, 5 and 7. And we had foster kids that were older than us. And they came with their set of trials. And we simply were not thriving. Our family wasn't thriving with them in our house. Okay? It's okay to take on more than you can handle sometimes because God still has a plan. So she turned to my dad. She said, "Eric, I think the Lord's asking us to stop being their parents." And it broke her heart. My mother is a caregiver at her core. And even after we stopped fostering, we had other kids in my house all the time that were her other daughters and her other sons because she's a caretaker. Her heart was broken, and it was not the right time for my dad to roll over and say, "Let's walk away." It made her furious, so mad. But lo and behold, the next day, that's exactly what God asked her to do during church. Right? Right? She was sitting in church, and God said to her out loud, "You need to walk away." She walked out of church. "I'm not doing it," okay? No, there's no way. She didn't even want to tell my dad about it. She's like, "Nuh-uh, he's not right." A month later, our house was sold. A month later, Dad quit his job. A month later, they applied for their credentials with the Pentecostal Assemblies of Canada and were a registered charity. A month later, he gave us a trailer to live in for our first 8 months on the road. And guess what? Everyone in our life told us we were wasting our life. It's true. They told us we were crazy. It's not possible. God can't do that. I'm sorry, but he can. By a very worldly standard, we were not accepted. By a biblical standard, we were. Somewhere along the line, the root of the matter is we started to forget our purpose, and we started to not see the identity that Christ had called us to. Somewhere along the line, we mistook our busyness as spirituality and assumed our purpose was to fill our lives to overflowing with what we deemed was God's work. Work changed from a mere material thing to an identity thing. Work used to be about making things and just earning money, but now it's about making us. It has become our reason for living. We pour everything into what we value. We are overachievers in the area of doing. A job is less about our paycheck now and more about our purpose. 7 out of 10 millennials claim that at some point and some level, they have reached burnout. And you have to remember that millennial generation is only a few years older than me, okay? And at my age, they're experiencing burnout already. Why is that? We're not supposed to reach our midlife crisis until we're 50. What happened? We started filling our life with busyness. This fulfillment that we think we have is just a face covering up the insecurity found in our identity because we lost sight of Jesus. We started listening to other voices instead of the whisper he was trying to get us to hear. I'm worried I'm not needed. I'm worried I won't leave a mark. I'm worried I wasn't created to be anything but busy. I'm worried that, no, sorry, this is wrong. I have to stop here. That was not right. That was right. Therefore, busyness is where I now find my worth. Because I'm worried I'm not needed. I'm worried I won't leave a mark, and I'm worried I wasn't created to be anything but busy, so I must be. Your purpose is not to be the best version of yourself. Your purpose is not to be a parent on the go. Your purpose is not to volunteer in every aspect of the church. Your purpose is not to be a spouse of all trades. Your purpose is not to be an athlete or a musician or a star student. We started believing this. We started believing that if I am busy, I will be successful. We started believing that if I'm busy, my children... No, sorry. If... I wrote this. If your children try every activity, then they will be well-rounded. We started to believe that. And if I'm not volunteering, my children won't know that they're loved. And if I'm not volunteering in my church family will not know that I love Jesus. Once I have accomplished all of these things, once I have accomplished everything on my to-do list, I believe that I will be in control. It's my day, guys. So, if I'm busy, I will be in control. If I'm busy, I will be made worthy. And if I am busy, I will have purpose. Can I say that again just so you can hear how godless it sounds? If I am busy, I will be in control. If I am busy, I will be worthy. If I am busy, I will have purpose. Bonnie McKernan puts it like this. It's going to be on the screen. Though I never will admit it, it's almost as if I want to streamline and organize and simplify my life to a point where I no longer need God to get me through the day. But my strengths and my abilities will fail again and again. I heard it said that life is not defined by the marathon you are running, but by the title of runner placed on your life. You see, we have this ability to reach a goal and still feel unsuccessful. But who we become and who we mirror our life after is how we will be remembered. You are not defined by your actions, but by your character. Yet all my character screams at the moment is stress, anxiety, depression, and simply a bad attitude. Because of my busyness. Your truth is this: you were not created to be a parent, you weren't created to be a spouse or a friend, you were created to reflect Christ. That characteristic is measured in how you raise up your kids. That characteristic is measured in how you inspire your spouse closer to Jesus. That characteristic is measured by how you reflect the face of God to your friend and how you respond to authority in your life and how you handle conflict when it arises. All of those things can't be done in chaos because I simply miss it. I simply walk away from the prayer request because I was so busy. Your purpose is this and this alone. Sit and listen. Most of us have a very strong urge to do the exact opposite of that. It's true. My brother, when we were homeschooled, used to sit in the living room doing his math final exam on his phone, playing a game, writing with his hand, and watching TV with his eyes. He was doing too much at once to fully comprehend what was going on. It's truth. You are called to sit and listen, even though all you want to do is keep your hands busy. Keep your mind busy, because we started doing tasks in front of the TV. We started doing tasks while we held our phone in our hand. Pastors have reached a record high in burnout over the last decade. More pastors leave the faith entirely because they simply cannot serve anymore. They've reached burnout. But I would question this. If you are living in the purpose God has for you, do you think the result will be burnout? I don't think he calls you to that. I think if you are living in his purpose and in his plan, burnout is not the result. That doesn't mean that you won't be living a life of service. It just means your to-do list has changed. Anybody here a list maker? I am 100%. I had 4 lists on the go this week just so I could accomplish anything. But if I were to turn over those lists to Jesus at any point in the day, the first few things that he would prioritize weren't even on my list. It's true. Because I am the person that walked past Zacchaeus in the tree. And I am the person that didn't stop when the child was pulling on my coat strings. And I'm the person who didn't stop and pray after I wrote on Facebook, praying for you. Because I am that person. I've created such an environment of busyness that I've started missing the to-do list that Jesus has for me and following my own. It's funny how my soul craves this very slow and steady pace, and yet I still find my time filled with tasks of so little importance. And then I become mad at him when I'm tired, stressed, or overwhelmed, all of which are my own making. Have you noticed that busyness changes your mood? Maybe you snapped at your kids or your spouse or a friend and you don't know why, but maybe you do. It's because you feel weary and you feel burnt out. Martha did too. When she called on Jesus, she said, Jesus said this, Martha. It says, Martha became angry because she had so much work to do. She went in and said, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me alone to do the work? Tell her to help me. That doesn't sound like a very good prayer. It doesn't sound like a very good response to Jesus. She became angry and her mood changed. She was missing out because of her busyness that had changed her mood. If you have been called to something else, then you must trust that the job you are doing will get done by someone else. You don't need all the details, but the truth is that you're not the only one qualified to do it, as hard as it is to hear. In fact, Jesus can move without you. But he also wants to move in you. He wants to move in you for his purpose, and he wants to move in somebody else for their purpose. But sometimes our busyness has us working away at a purpose that isn't even ours. It has me doing somebody else's. What good is that? Oftentimes we hear the illustration, and this is what Jefferson said on the video, oftentimes we hear this illustration that I'm on this path. And the footsteps, 2 by 2 beside each other, is when I was walking with Jesus. And one set of footsteps is when he carried me. And the long line is when he dragged me, right? I heard this recently. There's the bridge over troubled water that we traveled over. But I think there's another part to this illustration. I think there's a spot where he's walking behind me. Because I want to be going 15 miles an hour. And he doesn't. He's waiting for you in the 30 years. He says, can you walk beside me for those 30 years until we get to your purpose? Can you walk in the wilderness with me for 40 years until you get to your purpose? Are you willing to follow me when your purpose isn't there? when you don't see it. It's still his purpose, but you don't understand it. If you've reached the point of desiring change in your life, I want you to listen to this. We're almost done here. Start small. I was talking to God this week, and I said, okay, but where do I start on this? Because you know I am the worst at this. I know you're speaking purely to me before you're speaking to them. So where do I start? And he said, and it was not an answer I liked. He said, 30 seconds. And I said, 30 seconds? What are you talking about? Can we get there faster? Can we be more productive than 30 seconds? Sorry, Lord, you have a long way to go. It's the truth. He says, today I just want you to ask me where you missed me today. Tomorrow I want you to ask me the same thing. The day after that, maybe you ask me, what are my priorities for the day? And the day after that, maybe you actually listen to me. It's true. He says, start small because this habit that you have formed is deeply rooted. It's strong. It's not just a skill that you've built up. It's a habit that is in our hearts that is so strong that it's going to take time for him to clean you up. The surgery is not going to be easy, but it's going to be so worth it. Number two, stop believing the lies. The Bible is deeply rooted in who you are becoming. He says, I need to take this out. And I need to take this out. And this out. And all of these need to disappear. He says, I need you to do heart surgery. My box got wet. No joke. Powerful moment, Jesus. Powerful moment. Did you get the picture, though? He says, I want you to take them out, and I want you to feel the pain of them so that you replace that habit with a rhythm. Because that hole he's leaving in you needs to be filled with something. It needs to be filled with 3 miles an hour. It's a rhythm, not a skill. Our religion believes that certain rituals from the Old Testament are legalistic now that Jesus came. That they were simply acts to get us into salvation. Am I right? But the truth is, Jesus asks for your acts. That's why he gave us communion, which we're going to do in just a minute. That's why he gave us communion so that you could focus on something, that you could eat something and remember. In the temple, they used to burn incense for the pure purpose of smelling in a pleasing aroma because they thought that that would bring the Spirit of God. God asks to show you in your smell, in your senses, in your hearing, in your sight. He says, I need you to create rhythms of doing that are not busyness. I need you to decide that when you get up in the morning, you're going to put on a worship video and just stand in your bedroom and worship. He says, I need you to, when you're on your drive to work, spend that whole time in prayer for those who are lost. He says, I need some ritual from you because this habit needs to be replaced with a healthy rhythm. You have to know that when you change your focus, fruit will result. We live our lives hoping to be the next big thing, looking for the same praise that God desires, only we're unworthy of it. But we desire the same thing. If you change your focus, your daily mindset, and your schedule, the fruit you so desire will follow. Your children will be well-rounded without busyness. Your friendships will flourish without busyness. Your marriage will thrive without busyness. Your ministry will do great things without busyness. Yes, we probably are too busy. Yes, we probably have too much stuff. Yes, we probably need more sleep, but fixing these things will be the fruit of seeking the face of God. Not a result of busyness. Psalms 19:7 says this, Revelation, I passed all that. Psalms 19:7 says, the revelation of God is whole and pulls our lives together. The signposts of God are clear and point out the right road. The life maps of God are right, showing the way to joy. The directions of God are plain and easy to the eyes. God's reputation is 24 karat gold with a lifetime guarantee. Can you tell it's the message version? The decision of God are accurate down to the ninth degree. So my question is this, do you feel whole? Is the direction clear to the right road? Does it feel right? Does it result in joy? Does it make sense, even if we don't want to do it? Are you hearing the voice of God in this, or are you hearing silence? You need to apply these questions to every decision. Have you been working away at God's purpose for your life or God's purpose for somebody else's life? I believe it happens. Our need to accomplish greatness, keep our lives full, occupy our time, has us running all over the place doing the job of somebody else. Only those who are anchored in a richer, deeper, and more meaningful experience than the one our culture is currently offering won't get sucked away. We have to call it what it is, sin, and allow God to change your habits into healthy rhythms. Matthew 5:4 says, you're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. You have to let go of this busyness that you're holding on to just to hold on to Jesus. It's your barrier. It's your stronghold. It's your brick wall. What habits do you need to throw away to live within his purpose? What things do you need to clear from your schedule in order to hear the direction of God? I'm going to call the worship team up, and in a moment, we're going to dive into communion. Come on up. Yeah. I want you to take a moment to ask God to remind you of the purpose he ordained for you on the day his son died. Ask him to make it clear to you that you may lead your life, your family, your relationships in the call that God has already ordained for you. What rhythms does he want you to take on to replace your habits? Ask him. He'll tell you if you sit and listen, even though everything inside you doesn't want to. He'll give you your purpose and your call. He says, this is who I am, and this is who I've created you to be. Don't get it mixed up with your accomplishments. We're going to sing Good, Good Father, and then Don's going to do communion. And then we're going to spend one more song in prayer after that. And I hope you simply take time not to sing. Take time to listen. He's speaking to you, and we're too busy in church doing too many things sometimes to hear him. It's the truth. Now, I'm not calling you to rip everything out and stop serving in the church. The Lord knows our church would not survive without it. But our church would survive in perfect harmony and thrive if each and every one of you were doing your purpose. So ask him. Ask him where he wants you to start.